Major art theft in Boston overnight. Two thieves posing as police officers overpowered museum guards.
Very dramatically said, gentlemen, this is a robbery.
A part of our heritage has been stolen.
This horrible thing occurred in 1990. Everything changed because of that.
Someone on the inside helped the thieves.
From the guys who brought you Missing Maura Murray and Crawl Space.
Empty Frames will be available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite podcasts on February 6th.
A lot of listeners have tweeted in and texted in their excitement to hear you, and welcome to, or I should say, welcome back to the Bay Area, Mr.
Yeah, man.
Stanford, man. How you doing this morning, Richard?
Hey.
I'm doing great. You know, I'm back in my bed. I'm hanging with my kids this morning.
Nice.
It's been a great weekend, you know, full of excitement and and chaos. But I've enjoyed it.
Right. Simon and Cass. Help us, let us get to know your family a little bit. Who are your kids? How old are your kids?
Oh, I got two kids. I got a 3-year-old. My daughter will be 2 in April. So my son was the one who was going to be born during the second Super Bowl that we went to. So he's 3 now, but they're awesome.
What an incredibly cute age to come in and snuggle with daddy. That's awesome, man. So, you said excitement and chaos. I'm going to give you like the floor to kind of explain both emotions there since the release on Friday.
Well, it was more chaos because, you know, you're dealing with I'm at the NFLPA meeting, so I'm on the executive committee, and we're trying to deal with the issues of the players and have those conversations. And in the midst of that, you know, trying to talk to these teams that are calling and schedule visits and figure all that out. So then I got a chance to fly to San Fran, meet with Kyle, meet with John, meet with Prod, and do all that while still going back and forth with these teams, you know, keeping everybody informed, having these conversations, and then got to fly back to the PA meetings to vote on resolutions, to vote on executive committee, to, you know, do our whole due diligence because, you know, serving the players means a lot to me. So it was just crazy, you know, flying back and forth and back and forth, and now I'm finally.
Now you rock in the Southwest. You're like standing there as a C-32 going from Bay Area to Vegas.
Yeah. Group C, get over there.
You know what? Well, I really was about to take Southwest there because that was the only flight that would get. That's the flight they were trying to. That was. And it was too soon, though, because they called me at, like, 105 or something, or 115.
Yeah.
And the flight was at 2:30. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to grab some clothes and get to the airport about 2:30.
Oh, man, that's too funny. So, listen, when the 49ers called, you could have said, no, sorry, I have other ideas. There's other teams because of the history, because of the rivalry, because of everything. But you said, yeah, John Lynch, I'll take your call. I'll come meet with you. Tell us why you said yes.
Well, because I have a tremendous amount of respect for John. You know, obviously a Stanford grad, so there was history there. I also have a ton of respect for Kyle and his system and how creative he is offensively and the mind he has. So I wanted to have a conversation with him and just pick his brain a little bit because he's one of the guys I respect most in this league in terms of offensive innovativeness. And so I did. I came over and had the conversation. You know, these guys weren't really part of that history necessarily.
Right.
Now, if it was the previous coaching staff, then, you know, those would probably be a different conversation. But,
yeah, man. Yeah.
But it wasn't. You know, it was, you know, these guys were the first ones to call, the first ones to jump on board. You know, I really, really appreciated that. And I liked what they have going there. Also, you know, I'm a West Coast guy. I'm back in the Bay. All those things came into play.
Oh, talking to Richard Sherman on the Murph and Mac show right now. Richard on the UMA guest line. And so those are huge factors, right? Lynch, Shanahan. And what about what the 49ers are building or what they started to build last year with the arrival of Jimmy Garoppolo? Honestly, Richard, everything kind of changed at that from that moment on. They didn't lose a game. So your kind of view of that, and did that play a role in the appeal as well?
Oh, definitely. You know, if they don't have Jimmy G and they're not winning those games, you know, I'm not sure I still consider it unless, you know, they get a quarterback in agency or something, a high level talent. But they did. And they did play great defense down the stretch. Robert Saleh has a system that I'm very familiar with, and I've enjoyed a ton of success in the system. So that also played a factor. You know, it's familiarity. I walk into the system a lot. I don't lose a step. I don't lose a beat. Don't miss a beat. You know, it's being right back home.
Really good stuff with Richard Sherman. So, listen, John and Kyle, commanding respect. It's kind of, it's funny, Bill Belichick said he traded Jimmy G because he wanted him to be in kind of the Lynch-Shanahan fold. He respects those guys. So Jed apparently made a heck of a couple of hires there because it's working nicely. But you know what's funny, Richard, is you went to dinner at what is now becoming the Toots Shores, like the Joe DiMaggio Toots Shores of the 49ers, Nick's next door down in Los Gatos. Paulie and I have been there. Tanika, our producer,
has
been there.
Yeah, that's like the place, man.
And you guys, you know, because now you're in public when you're sitting there, so how come people start tweeting? Richard Sherman's having dinner with Kyle Shanahan here at Nick's Next Door. And, well, we had two questions, like, A, how was that dinner? And then, B, did you get the meatloaf?
I hope you did, because it's good. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what they suggested, to get the meatloaf.
Nice.
So, yes, I got it.
Nice, man.
Kyle got the duck. But yeah, I mean, once we kind of got to that place, it was a secluded area, right, on the outdoor patio. So, you know, early on, nobody really knew, you know, what was going on. They saw Kyle walk through with his wife, and, you know, I'm sitting there with a hoodie on in my back to everybody else. So, you know, nobody knew who I was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Elijah Holder, the corner from Stanford, comes out and kind of blows up my scene. You know, because we start having a conversation. I had to get up and, you know, talk to him, ask him about his injury and things, and that's when people started to notice.
So funny, man. And that's what happens. Then people start tweeting. Next thing you know, there's a
picture. It's like high school, man. You know what I mean?
Next thing you know, there's a picture of you and John and your beautiful fiance, Ashley, and Parag Marate. And that's when you guys got it done. And then that leads us to this, Richard, which is a big news talking point around the NFL that you represented yourself. So I guess this is a two-part question. One, why don't you use an agent? You obviously do that for a reason. I mean, I know you're saving serious commission when you do that. And then two, how do you react to this criticism of your deal, especially Joe Thomas just really coming right at you? I don't even know if you guys have a history, but maybe it's just a business criticism. I don't know. But why don't you use an agent, and how do you react to people criticizing you when they say you didn't negotiate a good deal?
Because there was no reason to negotiate it with an agent. I mean, it wouldn't have helped the situation. You know, I'm still coming off a ruptured Achilles. You know, I've played at a high level. And at the end of the day, if I would have been on my same contract with Seattle and we get all the way to training camp and they cut me at the end of the training camp, I don't get a dollar of the, you know, the $11 million that I'm due. This situation, I'm already, you know, I already get $5 million, you know, going in. I already got more money than I would have gotten in my other deal already. And the rest of it, I'm happy to earn. You know, I believe in myself as a player. I believe and what I can do, so I would suggest people to judge this at the end of the deal rather than judging it, you know, at the beginning, because, you know, they judged me as a player at the beginning. You see how that worked out for them.
Nice, man. Richard Sherman with us on the Murph and Mac Show, and I know, obviously, you're going to be highly motivated to perform at a high level this year. But just for yourself and the people that do have those views and they've made those comments about what to expect from Richard Sherman this next season, I mean, do you expect to play all 16? Or are you going to be good to go for an entire season? Is that your goal?
I fully expect to be ready for all 16. And I expect to play at a high level. That's, you know, I've never not played at a high level if I'm playing. And I expect that to continue.
Yeah, Richard Sherman getting ready for training camp. What do you think you can get on a field? Has that been talked about, or is that something you don't even want to talk about now? Or do you think, hey, July, August, April, May, is there even talk of when you can put on some cleats and get on the grass?
I'm thinking more June. You know, I was really close before I had to get this bone spur removal to running on 100% of my body weight on the treadmill. I was at 90% with the Achilles. So I was on my way to get into the treadmill and, you know, progressing from the treadmill to the field, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I kind of slowed down once I got the bone spur removed. So, you know, just got to, you know, wait for this bone to kind of do what it's going to do and then back to progression.
Okay, we'll definitely take that into consideration. The fun stuff off the field, your competitive desire and your intensity led to some celebrated moments with Michael Crabtree, with Jim Harbaugh, et cetera, and then, of course, the turkey leg. And I know you addressed it on the conference call yesterday, but since we have you in more of a conversational setting here, what would you say, because we have a ton of 49er fans who are all tuned in. Guys are telling me they – called in late to work to listen to you today, this morning on the show.
For real, no joke.
I'm not kidding you, man. Yeah. So what would you say to all the Niner fans who are like, dude, you're like our biggest rival. You bowed up on us. You shouted at the Niners. You told us how much you hated us.
More than anything else, he ate the turkey leg. You know what I mean?
What's your chance to talk to him right now?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, it's one of those things. Hey, don't be mad at me. Be mad at NBC for kind of cattling us to the middle of the field and putting a turkey leg right there and giving us a player of the game ball. You know, it's one of those situations you're either disrespectful to them and say, you know, after you guys, when you're in a good mood, you know, you usually just kind of, you know, just go with the flow, whatever they say. They say, stand over here, you stand over here. They say, sit over here, you sit right there. You know, in that situation, they ask us to sit right there. You know, by the time you realize you're in the middle of the field, it's after the game. It's after the game, and you're dressed on the bus. And you look on your Twitter, and everybody's like, "You are on the middle of the field doing this, eating a turkey leg." And in reality, you're like, "Well, they gave me the player to game ball. I thought I was just sitting there, you know, having a conversation after game, kind of a post game interview."
Yeah.
And
I think I think it's a list. You know what I'm thinking now? We turn this into a positive.
Dude,
the way Red Auerbach would light a victory cigar. I think now any game you're playing for the 49ers in late fourth quarter and it's over, I think you start eating a turkey leg on the Niners side.
No, I was going to say have Nick wheel out the meatloaf, dude. Your new signature dish in San Francisco. Okay. You start digging into the meatloaf. That'll be like our victory dance.
All right. Just something for you to consider, Richard.
Mull that over.
Hey, on that topic.
You know, it's under strong consideration.
Okay, man, totally.
On that topic, I heard from so many 49ers fans who've been blocked by you on Twitter. So, like, Ben Godfrey wrote in, can you ask Richard to unblock me? Will you go on an unblocking binge of Niner fans, Richard?
Yeah. I actually have to get on that. I think 49ers 24/7 was working on getting me a list of people to unblock.
Oh, that's awesome. That is so funny. That's great stuff. Hey, just a few more things before we let you go. It's really, you know, as we've known since you were at Stanford, you're always one of the great outspoken, thoughtful guys in the NFL and been written about so many different times, so I just kind of want to pick your brain on different things. Colin Kaepernick used to be your rival. You know, you guys tried to get in his head and beat him as much as you could, but then he's in the NFLPA and he went unsigned last year, and it was hard. We spent the whole fall saying, how can there be 60 quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick? There aren't. So for you, I mean, maybe take off your uniform for a moment and talk as an NFL fraternity brother. What's your view now on what the NFL did to Colin Kaepernick last year, and was it the result of a political sort of blockade?
You know, it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate, at least. And it's one of those situations where, you know, if we could prove it was, you know, collusion and that they just, you know, blackballed him and didn't allow him to play, didn't assign him because of what he did in terms of his protest, then we would do everything we could, but it's so difficult because this is a league where everything is subjective. You know, a team could say, well, he doesn't fit our scheme, he doesn't fit our system, we didn't like the way he dropped back, we don't like his throwing motion, we don't like this. So it's so difficult to prove, but it really seemed that way for sure.
So obviously, it probably on some level, did it madden, irk you, or get you upset?
It was frustrating because he deserved a chance to play. You know, it's more frustrating watching some of these quarterbacks, you know, go out there and play terribly and know that, you know, he's played at a high level for a number of years, pretty much his whole career, and he doesn't even get the opportunity to go, you know, see what he can do. You know, if he goes out there and doesn't play well, then sure, justify it. Don't let him back on the field. But if you got to at least give him a shot, you know, especially with the level that some of these players are playing at. I mean, you know, I'm sure he could have played for the Jets this year and done a much better job. Actually, Chase did a pretty good job, but Cleveland could have used him.
Right.
You know, once Watson went down. Houston definitely could have used him. Denver would have done everything. They had talented defense, great receivers. You know, you throw a pretty good quarterback in the mix. You know, who knows how that changes that dynamic. But, you know, I think sometimes to make a point, teams would rather just, you know, lose.
Yep. Very much so. And that, you know, and again, these are heavy questions for just an early morning conversation. But just while we have you, there was a video posted by 2-year-old Seahawks teammates of a woman, some crazy woman, followed them to the training facility and was shouting at them, get off your blanking knees and play. These are my tax dollars. I mean, she clearly was a crackpot. But that's what's out there, Richard. Like, people are out there, and they talk about the declining TV ratings. And then there's a guy in the White House who's yelling at you guys all the time. And you're such a thoughtful dude, and you've spoken out on these things. Where are we at right now in the NFL players who want to just express their views as players versus some of these people who are shouting at them to get off your knees and play, shut up and dribble, this kind of thing? Is this something that's on your mind and something you're following?
It's definitely on my radar. And I think it says more about those people than it does the players. You know, I think it says something about the kind of the landscape that we're in right now and how bold some people are with their beliefs. And it's unfortunate. You know, it's unfortunate that players have to deal with this, that people have to deal with this in general and deal with those type of people. You know, those guys were doing nothing wrong. Guy coming into work and has to deal with being harassed and being yelled at. And if he would have done anything to retort, anything to respond to that, then he would have been vilified, you know, immediately. You know, they're like, the lady has the right to express her views when she's talking to these guys like that. But if they, you know, if they respond in a way that seems as derogatory in any way, in any manner, then, you know, it's on every news channel, it's on every headline, you know. And that's what's unfortunate about it. You know, guys have to deal with this kind of harassment and verbal abuse, can't really respond at all.
Yeah, I just want to get your opinion, because I know you've been good about talking about these things, and that came out this week, and obviously it's going to be something that's going to happen again this summer and fall. We'll see how the NFL does it. Just kind of wrapping up here, Richard, so much has been written about you growing up in Compton and that your neighborhood was not a place where a lot of kids went to Stanford, and that was something you wanted to do and go prove. And David Shaw gave this quote on you that I think is – maybe, I don't know, is this the best way for 49ers fans to get to know you? He said there's, quote, two Richard Shermans, unquote. And he said there's the brilliant, thoughtful conversationalist who can analyze almost any topic and really enlighten everybody and share ideas. And then there's the guy on the field who will fight anybody, anywhere, anytime. And I heard you once agreed with that. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely truth to that. You know, that's what people got to realize. You know, on the field, it's a different fight, it's a different animal.
Yeah.
And you got to bring that out if you really want to get to the highest level, if you really want to play and execute at the highest level and really play fearlessly. And off the field, you know, you conduct yourself in a manner that your parents will be proud.
Hey, man, before we let you go, and thank you for that, but before we let you go, we got to at least ask you this, because something you can't help but be aware of, because it's a talking point, not only here in the Bay Area, but kind of in the whole NFL now, Jimmy Garoppolo's kind of unnerving good looks. It's like you can't avoid how handsome this dude is. So I just want, like, the Richard Sherman kind of evaluation of being, you know, part of a team with a dude who, frankly, I don't know, he makes Tom Brady look like a homeless guy. So what do you think about playing with the most handsome quarterback in the NFL?
Well, you know, honestly, I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, if it helps us win games and helps the franchise sell tickets, and, you know, I'm all for it because he's playing at a high level. He's winning the way you can win right now. He's winning ball games. He's winning off the field. He's winning with his looks. So we'll take it. He's a winner.
We were wondering if it was actually a factor. You were sitting down with Parag going, you know, I want to be around Jimmy G.
Yeah.
The dude's just got
some kind of magnetism, man. I want to be a part of it.
He just has that look.
He really does.
Did you see the Niner boombox that came out at the end of the year? Did you ever see that on social media?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, I just want you to investigate, because Jimmy G would walk out helmetless, and Kyle has a DJ that was carrying a boombox, and it's like the biggest boombox you've ever seen. Richard, it's, I don't know, 20 feet by 10. So I just want to see opening weekend, you, Jimmy G, and the boombox leading out of the tunnel. I think that's my
I'm looking forward to that.
That sounds good to me.
And
we're going to come out and swag it out the whole year for sure.
Nice. And by the way, number 25 is Jimmy Ward and you. Have you guys been exchanging negotiations or?
Yeah. We had a good conversation, and he's gonna give me my number, which is cool and a testament to him.
That's
He's a great guy. And you know he told me the story of why he wore the number. And it actually meant a lot to him. So you know, I appreciated him being willing to give me a chance at it.
It's great stuff, Richard. And we look forward to hopeful more conversations as the summer and the fall dawns. And if based on what's coming in on the text line, people really enjoyed hearing you this morning. So we appreciate you taking time away from your kids. I know they want daddy time, so you go give them some daddy time. And thanks for coming on Cambiar on the Murph and Mac Show.
Yeah,
welcome back to the Bay Area.
Thank you very much. I look forward to coming on again soon.
Richard Sherman, everybody, on KMBR 680, the sports leader.